From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Dan Fung Dennis is a photojournalist who, for years, covered the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. You would have seen his photographs in Newsweek, in Rolling Stone, in the New York Times, among many others. These were remarkable images, touching and heartbreaking. But Dennis has said as the wars dragged on, he began to notice his photos were losing their impact. He realized he had to find another way to convey the experience of war. So he created a custom camera system that would immerse viewers in the moment. And in the process, he created something unique, a new visual experience. Today in the program, we continue our series on documentaries by profiling the film Dan Fung Dennis has produced. It's the story of one wounded soldier and what it means to go home. It's called Hell and Back Again, after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. In the summer of 2009, the war in Afghanistan had come to a critical point. Military officials launched an operation designed to root out Taliban insurgents in critical parts of that country. The U.S. Marines of Echo Company 2nd Battalion, 8th Regiment, 35 men in all, were dropped behind enemy lines to essentially take a hill. Dan Fung Dennis is a photojournalist who, for years, has covered the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. He was embedded with these Marines. Dennis has said that he realized he had to find another way to convey the impact of war. He said that his photos, the photos that he had been taking for years, weren't having the same kind of impact. So he created a custom camera system that would immerse viewers in the experience. Along the way, he created a new visual experience. Today in the program, we continue our series on documentaries by profiling the film Dan Fung Dennis has produced. It's the story of one wounded soldier and what it means to go home. It's called To Hell and Back Again. We're screening the film tomorrow. We'll give you the details about that as we go along. We'd like you to join the conversation. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Dan Fung Dennis is a photojournalist who has covered the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, as I said, since 2006. His images have appeared in Newsweek, Time, The New York Times, among many other publications. He's the founder of an immersive video startup called Condition One, and we'll be talking about that as we go along as well. To Hell and Back Again is his first feature-length documentary. Tomorrow night there's going to be a free screening of the film. As I mentioned, we'll give you the details about that. He's joining us today, Dan Fung Dennis is, from a studio at Stanford University in Palo Alto, California. And Dan Fung Dennis, welcome to the program. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So let's begin, Dan Fung Dennis, as the film does. This is I wanted you to set up the experience of war for us. This is the summer of 2009, as I said, and the military's launching this operation in Afghanistan. And as I said, it's this critical part of war. And you felt like you had to be there, that you felt like that this was something you didn't want to miss. Talk about why.
I had been deeply moved by images from past wars, especially Vietnam and Bosnia and Rwanda. And I wanted to follow in this tradition and try to contribute to this visual documentation of what humans were capable of doing to other humans and what evil actually looked like. And I remember the first time I opened this book, it was called Inferno by James Noctway. And it was images from the last 30 years of war. And it shook me. It changed how I saw the world. And I had to do something about it. And so I trained myself for quite some time to shoot in difficult situations. And I went to Afghanistan in 2006. And I covered the conflict there as it escalated and became more violent. And in July of 2009, I became informed of this very large offensive. The conflict had reached a stalemate in southern Afghanistan. There was simply not enough troops to clear the areas where the Taliban had their strongholds. And so Obama sent 30,000 additional Marines, and I was embedded with Echo Company 2-8 of the 2nd Marine Division as they assaulted into southern Helmand Province. And this was a known stronghold. And this was going to be the largest air assault since Vietnam, 4,000 Marines going in. And Echo Company was going the furthest south. And so I was with this company of men. You know, there's always some distrust between a tight-knit military unit and outside journalists. But once you go through some difficult experiences, they learn to trust you. And that was in July in 2009. And I remember the night before the operation started, it was actually quite cold. And we were sleeping out in the desert. And I didn't sleep at all, just sort of thinking about what the next day was like. But everyone was quite calm. This was sort of what they had trained for and what they were ready for. And there was a speech by the battalion commander, and essentially saying that this moment would define the war in Afghanistan, it would define their lives, and it could change the course of history. And that's really where the story starts.
Let me play a moment. This is from that speech, because it sets up the kind of, not just the intensity of the moment, but the stakes. Here it is from those first moments of that experience of Dan Fung Dennis's in Afghanistan, the summer of 2009, from his film Helen Back Again.
Every interaction we have with the people is critical to our success. They have to develop trust in us. We have to develop trust in them. But make no mistake, we're experts in the application of violence. When you move with a sense of purpose and aggression intent on finishing the enemy. Your conscience should be clear and your honor should be clean. Your measure is not found in how much time you have on this earth, but what you do with the time that you have. 40 or 50 years from now, when you're sitting around with your grandchildren, they're going to ask you what you did in the summer of decision in Afghanistan. The world will remember what you do here this summer. And believe me, Echo Company is going to change history starting early tomorrow morning.
Dan Fung Dennis, are you as nervous as you think the soldiers are at that moment?
I'd say nervous isn't quite the right word. It's this sort of tense anticipation. And actually, strangely, I felt quite calm. And, you know, there's really nothing you can do beyond that point except just stay calm and focused. It's important to just really be aware of your own sort of emotional state and just take it as it comes. Mm. And so I remember just before the helicopters come in, and there's this just immense dust cloud. And there's this swirling dust, and everyone's covering their eyes, and the helicopters land, and the Marines just start streaming into the back of the helicopters. And I realized that my camera jammed, that the dust had gotten into the shutter button, and I wasn't able to start recording. And so all these esoteric questions of what am I doing here? If my camera doesn't work, do I get on this mission if I can't document it? What is my role? And then I just used my fingernail and dug the dust out, and the shutter button popped back up. I started recording and then got onto these helicopters.
Give us a sense, if you – I want to play another clip, which will give people a sense of what this is like, the fighting. I think this might have been the first day, all focused around this place known as Machine Gun Hill. And it's – you know that soldiers know what they're doing, and you know that there's a plan. But at times it just seems, I have to say, really chaotic. And the idea of the film, a big part of the idea is giving people a sense of what this is like. We won't have the same sense, of course, because this is radio and we're not going to be able to see that part of it. But I wanted to play a sense of this and have you talk about what it's like to be there. We're going to hear, among other voices, Sergeant Nathan Harris, whom we'll talk about, of Echo Company 2nd Battalion. Again, this is from Dan Fung Dennis's film, Helen Back Again.
Hey, keep moving. Keep moving. We can't stop. Let's go. Keep going. Keep going. Keep going. Keep going. Get on the berm. Get on the berm. Hey, remember, the rounds were hitting on the other side of that rock pile.
He's coming.
Let's go,
we're in the top.
Yeah, they're west. Try and see them, man. If you see them, shoot them.
What? We know where they're shooting from.
They're shooting at it.
They're good at ghosting.
But you can't see them.
See where they're at.
Mark it.
8-6-6-6.
Ten Funk Dennis, you spend the entire film kind of wincing, and I never realized until seeing the film just how heavy their backpacks are. I mean, talk about the experience of what we're going to see and your experience of shooting that, because it's hard to convey in just a clip on the radio, but the idea of being immersed in it, talk about that.
So that clip was on the first day of this offensive. And after those helicopters dropped us off, Echo Company moved into an empty village. And shortly after that, we were surrounded on all sides and an attack commenced. And the fighting really focused around this pile of rubble that became known as Machine Gun Hill. And after the first day, one Marine had been killed, a dozen had collapsed from exhaustion, and almost all of us had run out of water. And in my years of working there, this was the most dire situation I'd ever been in. It was extremely chaotic. They didn't know where the incoming fire was coming from. And it was just extremely difficult. Everyone, you know, you come in carrying 130 pounds, everything you need for that the 7-month deployment. And that was where I first met Sergeant Harris. He passed me his last bottle of water. And I could tell he was this exceptional leader. He was chosen to be the first one to get off the helicopters and lead this operation. He had done 2 tours previously. And so I followed his platoon as they pushed in into the stronghold even further. And so I knew I wanted to capture this of this significant moment of this operation, but I didn't have any intention of actually making a film. I was just there as an independent photojournalist documenting. And the story ended up following that one Marine, Sergeant Harris, that I met on that first day. And I wanted to just convey just the brutal realities of what was happening there.
There's a moment in this battle, which you mentioned, where one of the Marines is hit. It's a Lance Corporal Sharp. And I want to play an excerpt of this, but I have to ask you about it. There are 2 moments in the film where we see soldiers down who end up dying. How do you treat that? Is there a kind of reverence? Do you wonder if you should show certain? I mean, there's nothing too explicit here. I don't want to suggest that there is. But you know what's happened. How do you treat it? How do you think about that as you're putting the film together and deciding whether to use any of these images?
It's respect.
Yeah.
And that first day, Lance Corporal Sharp, he had been ordered and the rest of the platoon to push over Machine Gun Hill. And he was shot in the neck. And I just remember they were carrying his body and I wasn't able to film at first. And then I just sort of broke out of it. And I just went into that autopilot of, I just have to do my job. I have to capture what's happening here. But you're also realizing this is an intensely personal moment. It's someone's badly hurt. And there is medics there. They're treating him. They're doing the very best they can to try to save him. And it's just very important to stay out of their way and give them the space they need. But at the same time, I'm there with a camera. And I have a responsibility to do my job and capture what the reality of war is, and not to sugarcoat it, and to actually show that there is death and what death looks like.
Let's go, he's bleeding the out.
Sharpie, come on, Sharp.
Let's go! Come on, Sharp! Come on, baby! Second.
Sharpie!
Come on,
Sharpie!
Hurry up!
Hey, Doc Quinton! Have Doc Quinton with us! We're gonna need him!
Let's go!
Where's the litter? Where's the litter?
They're coming!
This is the litter. Grab them. We gotta go.
Sharp.
Come on. Go.
Sharpie.
Back to the DOD.
Where am I carrying them?
Ready? Grab one.
Come on.
Let's go. We're taking them. Watch your back.
Come on. Bring it back to the DOD.
From the film Hell and Back Again, Dan Fung Dennis is with us, the director, the producer of the film. Tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, Radio West and the Utah Film Center is presenting Hell and Back Again at the Salt Lake City Public Library. Dan Fung Dennis will be there. He'll be on hand for a discussion immediately following the film. The event is free and open to the public. Plan on arriving early, though, to get your seat. Details are available on our website at KUER.org/Radio West. We'll take a brief break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we continue our series on documentary films called Through the Lens. We're talking about a film called Hell and Back Again. It was produced by the photojournalist Dan Fung Dennis. He chronicles the life of Sergeant Nathan Harris, who is wounded while serving in Afghanistan. It's a powerful story of what it means to return home, but the film is also remarkable for its visual imagery. Dennis created a camera system that immerses viewers in the experience of war. We're screening the film tomorrow. Today in the program, Dan Fung Dennis is joining us. We invite you to join us as well. If you have comments or questions, 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@KUER.org. Dan Fung Dennis, you talked about meeting Nathan Harris when he gave you his bottle of water. You probably took note of him before all of that. He's a pretty charismatic guy. How do you describe your relationship with him now?
We keep in close touch, and we're good friends. We've been through a lot, and so we really trust each other. And he's the most honest and open person I've ever met. He's a leader. He's a leader of men, and so I could see that from the very beginning of this operation. And so when we started pushing further past Machine Gun Hill into this stronghold, I stuck quite closely to him and his platoon. And so, you know, we got to know each other pretty well. You know, we slept in the same dust. We were going on the same combat patrols. And it wasn't until about seven months later that I realized the story would be just about him. And that was when the Marines were coming off the buses back in North Carolina at Camp Lejeune to this very emotional homecoming to their families. And there was this crying and cheering and I soon realized that Nathan didn't step off the bus. And so I just asked the guys, where is Sergeant Harris? And they say, he was hit 2 weeks ago. He was medevaced out. And so I gave him a call. He was just being released from a naval hospital. He had undergone multiple surgeries. He had been shot in the hip by a machine gun round and caused devastating damage. He'd almost bled to death. And he suffered so much blood loss that he had to have these massive transfusions. And he was in a lot of pain. Yet he invited me back up to his hometown of Yadkinville, North Carolina, this very small town. And he introduced me to his wife, Ashley, to his friends and family. And he would say, this guy was out there with me. And so instantly, I was accepted into this rural Baptist community and essentially lived with Nathan and Ashley during his recovery, and more importantly, his transition back into a society that had very little understanding of what he had just been through. And so it became about a story of this one Marine and a psychological portrait of what it means to come home from war.
I want to sort of contrast, as you do in the film, two particular scenes. Because in some ways it's about the going to war, but it's as much about coming home. And in some ways, the way you have created the film, because we keep going back, we're in North Carolina then we're in Afghanistan, and then we're in North Carolina. And the contrast is so sharp. You get a sense, Dan Fung Dennis, that in some ways there's no separation in those experiences. You're seeing them, I think you've even talked about this, as the same experience in some way.
It really is one experience. That when you go to war and go through this very traumatic experience, then all of a sudden you're back home, back to that normal life. It is this huge contrast. You're going from this world of life and death and blood and dust back to one where it seems like everyone's shopping. Yeah. And that can be very disorienting. It can cause this feeling of isolation that no one understands what you've just been through or seen or done. And when you've been exposed to that much combat and trauma, it can really cause emotional numbness. And I think that's a very normal response to that type of traumatic experience. Your just body sort of shuts down emotionally to be able to handle it. And so when you come back, that's almost more difficult than what was over there. Over there, you had a mission, you had a purpose. Back at home, it's bills, it's relationships, it's all these sort of much more subtle things that you can't apply the same techniques of aggression and task-oriented behavior towards relationships. And so that transition home, I wanted to convey by cutting from one world to the other and merging them and blending them together to let the sounds of Afghanistan bleed back into North Carolina and then back and forth, to really get the sense that it really is one experience of going to war and coming home from it.
Well, let me play a few clips here so people can get a sense of that. First, hear Nathan Harris in action in Afghanistan from the film Helen Back Again.
Tell him we're sorry about the trouble we caused you. We just needed to check real quick as we're going through because we know there's bad guys in the area. Tell him again, I say I'm sorry. We must go. Thank you. Sorry about the trouble with this man. Keep pushing.
Get up here.
Push up, Dotson. Let's f***ing go. You cannot leave two Marines moving by themselves. Where's Tran's team? Come here, motherfucker! Get your team up here!
Roger.
They took off out of that building.
They took off out of this building? That's the building they took off out of, running that way, that tree line.
Running northwest.
Yep.
Tell them to watch that.
All right, let's go. Keep pushing. Tie in with the rest of the squad. Keep pushing north.
Okay, Nathan Harris in action. Now compare this to an experience when he's back home in North Carolina and he and his wife are going to a Walmart.
Look at this. There's not a single parking spot in this gigantic parking spot or any restaurant. Look at Chuck E. Cheese. Like, you can't even park at Chuck E. Cheese.
It's ridiculous.
It's unbelievable. So you come home and you're constantly stressed out because of all this crap. It makes me want to lose my freaking mind. It's just like, my God, I would rather be in Afghanistan where it's simple. When you come home, it's almost more difficult than doing that stuff than be here dealing with all this.
Dan McDennis, you get a sense he actually believes that. I mean, it's so tawdry and so – he gets frustrated. There's a moment, for example, when his wife is trying to order from some food from a drive-up window, and it just drives him crazy. And I'm not sure if it's because it's so ordinary or if there are different kinds of voices. I mean, it's really getting to him.
I think a lot of civilian life can seem mundane and trivial after you've been through that type of experience where you've had this intense purpose, this mission. Every single day you're making decisions that affect the lives of those around you. And you're just thrown back into this world where every decision you make doesn't actually have any consequences. They're small. And so it's very hard to reconcile that. And so when one is back, you're trying to find what your role again in society. A lot of those things that you did very well out there have no value back at home, and it's trying to figure out who you are. And I think for Nathan, He was this leader of men. He was this warrior. He was very good at what he did. And then when he's shot, he's reduced to a shell of a man that he once was. He's dependent on his wife, Ashley, for everything. And he's no longer to be that leader. He's just a wounded warrior back home. And you know, people thank him for his service. But they don't really know what he went through. And I think that can be isolating. And for many, they do want to go back because that's where they feel like they belong.
But that's what Nathan is feeling. I wonder, did throughout the process of all of this, did it cross over to the way you felt about all of that? I mean, you're shooting this scene at the Walmart. You know, you yourself have been in intense moments throughout the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Did you feel a similar kind of sense that of the utterly mundane to the experience of being in those intense moments?
Absolutely. And I think I tried to bring my own experiences into this film. I wanted to convey that sense of isolation, of disorientation, that of coming back home to society. And so I brought that in largely through the editing and through the sound. And I would take very emotional sounds, like crying, and then very metallic warlike sounds of metal grinding, everything that I had shot in the field, and I would slow those down to 2% or 4%, and at those speeds they create these low drones, and I would underlay those under certain scenes to convey things that I couldn't talk about or communicate or show in pictures. That sense of just being wrapped in numbness, of not being able to feel anything. And those sounds were a way for me to sort of just try to give the viewer an intensely personal and immersive experience of what does it actually feel like to come back from that world into one where someone will ask, how's Afghanistan, as if it was a vacation or something, and what do you say to that? And so this film, I think, is a way for me to express a lot of those things I couldn't communicate. And I think for many people that had been there, it's impossible for them to try to communicate what they saw.
It's so interesting what you do with the audio. I actually pulled up an excerpt of you distorting sounds and integrating it into this particular moment after Lance Corporal Sharp is killed. And it becomes so surreal, and it gives us a sense of what you were talking about, the way you blend in. I can hear the helicopter in here, but there's also a drone here that I can't quite identify, but I get a sense of what's, you know, what you're after. Let me play this. This is an audio section from Dan Funk Dennis's film, Helen Back Again. Is that what it feels like sometimes?
There are these sounds from Afghanistan. Even listening to that now, it brings you right back there. And I think I remember moments where I would have these vivid memories of these experiences, and they would come flooding back at almost at any moment. And they become so vivid and so real that they almost sort of block out everything around you, and so you can be just in some normal situation back at home, and those sounds just come back, and they flood back, and they always stay with you. And I think that's something that I wanted to come across.
How did you get, this is the question that all documentary filmmakers have to contend with, and that is how you become so much a part of your subject's life that they stop paying attention to you or paying attention to your camera. It's particularly relevant, I think, for what you captured with Nathan Harris and his wife Ashley. These moments where they're so intimate, people can tell when subjects are acting and when they're not. And that relationship is so real. I mean, how did you – there's this kiss, for example, in the parking lot of Walmart, which I found particular. It's just – it's not even worth playing because people won't – they have to see the moment. But it seems so real and the question – and there you are in the back seat. So, you know, so how do you pull that off as a documentary filmmaker?
I wanted to bring a lot of the methods and techniques that I had worked as a photojournalist, where I simply try to disappear and let events unfold in front of a lens in order to convey the most honest and truthful portrayal of a story. And so, you know, in Afghanistan, it's almost obvious what you should be shooting, but back in North Carolina, it was just Nathan, Ashley, and myself in these very intimate situations, yeah. Very private, very personal. And I think it was because I'd been out there with Nathan. He trusted me, and I trusted him. We had just come back from this world that no one understood, and so except the two of us. And so I think Ashley allowed me into her life largely because of that. Her husband trusted me, and so at first I didn't really shoot her as much just because we didn't have that kind of relationship yet. But then over time, over the weeks and months, and I'd revisit them and. It just got to the point where I almost just melted away, where they were continuing to live their lives as if I weren't there. And, they always know I'm there. Yeah. I'm in the back seat, I'm in the bedroom, I'm there with the camera. But it became so routine that, I was just part of their lives. I was part of their family, as they said. And I think also had to do with the camera I was using. It was a very small stills camera that I rebuilt to make it extremely compact and unintrusive so that I wouldn't be this burden or this intrusion on their lives.
Here's another moment from the film. This is Nathan. He's in bed. Ashley is next to him. And there's something not disturbing and not troubling. I mean, he's showing his wife how to use his gun. And you get a sense of his affection for this weapon. And Ashley isn't that interested, frankly, but she's sort of playing along. But it's such – I have to say it's such a kind of powerful, intimate moment that he was willing to share this part of himself. Again, it's another example of where it seems like you're almost not there as the documentary filmmaker. I want to play this moment. You want to say something about this moment when it came to you when you saw it?
Yeah, we were just, I think, in a bedroom, and Nathan always carries his gun, so he's teaching Nathan Ashley how to use it, and for him, that weapon is what kept him alive out there, and so back at home, it's very difficult to turn off a lot of those instincts, and so he carries his gun with him everywhere. He sleeps with it under his bed. He takes it out when he goes shopping, and that it provides him some comfort, I think. And so now I think he's just trying to be tender with Ashley, except it's this loaded gun.
Oh, I just love my pistol.
So good.
You know what? I just want to hold it. Hold it and caress it. I'm not pointing it at anybody. Okay, demonstration. All right, so you drop the mag, put the mag in, grab it, yank it, and it's ready to fire. That's all you need to ever know. Now, to aim it. See these three dots? You're going to line them up, okay?
Hold it. No, hold it right.
I might need to tilt it. You'll have to hold it right. Look, hold it just like this. Put one finger straight and off the trigger, and have a nice good grip on it. Your thumb goes right there, or wherever it's comfortable. Mine's more comfortable. Like this.
Dan Fung Dennis's film Hell and Back Again. Tomorrow night at 7:00, Radio West and the Utah Film Center is presenting the film at the Salt Lake City Public Library. Dan Fung Dennis is going to be on hand for a discussion right after the film. That event is free. but you should get there a little bit early to get a seat. Details are available at our website, KUER.org/Radio West. We'll take another brief break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we continue our series on documentary film called Through the Lens. Today, profiling a film called Hell and Back Again. It's produced by the photojournalist Dan Fung Dennis. We're screening the film tomorrow night. We'll give you the details about that. Today in the program, Dan Fung Dennis is joining us from a studio in Palo Alto, California, to talk about the film. 801-585-WEST, by the way, the number to join us, our email address, radiowest@KUER.org. Dan Fung Dennis, how do you describe Nathan Harris? I kept getting the sense that he is kind of extraordinary, unique in many ways. He's funny, but he seems incredibly bright and really charismatic. On one hand, you know, he seems like also sort of simple kid from a rural community in North Carolina. But on the other hand, he seems kind of exceptional. How do you describe the guy?
He is exceptional. He is extremely unique. He was raised in this very rural community. His father had always wanted to be in the Marines, but just never made the cut. And so he trained Nathan from a very young age to go into the military, taught him how to shoot, ran long distances. Nathan became a champion wrestler in high school, and at 18, he joined the Marines. And so he was almost this perfect warrior, and he was very good at what he did. And at the same time, he's that what makes him good as a Marine, that type of aggression, you know, it's doesn't fit in normal society.
Yeah.
So he's very lucky to have Ashley, where she knows who he is, knows how to handle him. And he's someone that just is completely open and honest. And I think he just shared everything about his life. He's very proud of what he does. And so it's someone that, you know, I care about a lot and I deeply respect. And someone who's been brave enough to share his life completely and open every aspect of that difficult struggle of coming home. And that type of bravery is very different from the bravery it takes to run through an open field against enemy fire. And so he's an incredible man.
When I was 18 years old, all I wanted to do was kill people. You know, and they used to ask me when I came in the Marine Corps, what you know, why did you come in the Marine Corps? You know, why did you come in the Marine Corps infantry? And I always told them because I want to kill people.
We can call them away.
And they always said, you know, that's the best answer I've ever heard. That's all they want. That's, you know, that's all they ever wanted. And, you know, I thought for a long time that was you know, that was cool. That's really what I wanted. And, you know, that's really the way I felt. You know, my first two deployments, I was kind of one of them guys that didn't really have any fear whatsoever. You know, I was ready to go do it. I wanted to go fight. I wanted to go kill the enemy and be, you know, a roughneck and cuss and spit tobacco and come home and do it again. And I did that. You know, I was just a young cowboy. And then this last time, you know, I had more concern about it, you know, like, you know, I'm all for it. Let's go do it. But, you know, I've already done it. And it's not everything you think it's going to be, and it's hard, and it's tough, and it changes people, and here I am going to do it again.
It seems like Dan Fung Dennis, this is a big part of what the film is about, is what, and I think you can apply this broadly, at least I do, how this experience changes people. He's as you say, brave enough, honest enough to talk about what he wanted when he went, but you can tell, you know, I think he says, you know, I had my 18-year-old head when I went in and now I'm 26, the 26-year-old head. What have you learned about how this has how this changes people, this experience?
I think there's this representation of war that is false. There's this mythical version of it that we've created that glorifies it and ingrains this view that there's honor and glory. And I think that's deeply ingrained within young men especially, and even including myself when I first went. And I remember trying to make images to meet those false representations, things that I'd seen in movies. And through the years of working there, you know, I just realized that what I had was something much more real and very different from what I thought it was going to be. It's pain, it's suffering, it's your friends getting killed and maimed. And so once you've seen it, once you've been through it, you know how terrible it is. And it's different from that young man version of wanting to have adventure and excitement. And so I think even though he's still only 26, he has matured. He's been through it, and he realizes just how dark it can be.
I've asked you this before. What's the gift? I mean, how does a good photographer capture a moment? Because you've talked about it being more than the moment. You said you have to capture the essence of the thing. Can you describe what you mean?
As a stills photographer, I was always looking for that decisive moment where a scene came together and crescendoed at one point where you just click that button and take that picture, and it would tell that story of who those people were and what was happening there. But most importantly, convey emotion. And that's what I brought with me into filmmaking, was how do I convey emotion, that feeling of what it's like to go through something, of what it's like to go through this story. And so I'm looking for these extended moments within just life where you're trying to get yourself as close as you can emotionally and even physically in certain situations and just capture everything that's going on and distill it down to that essence of what does this mean and what does it feel like. And so I'm just trying to create these immersive, powerful experiences that give you a sense, just, you know, even if it's a brief sense, of what it's actually like to go to war and come home from it.
Do the gifts translate? Stills and moving images?
Well, the reason I went from stills to moving images was, as you said, I felt that my images were losing their impact.
Yeah.
That after so many years of war, society was just numb. I had seen so many pictures that they didn't really have much meaning anymore. And I needed a new medium to try to convey these very important stories and try to shake people from their indifference and say, this is happening. How is it possible that this is still happening? And so now I've moved into a new experience, which I'm creating through a new camera system that can capture the entire human field of view, about 180 degrees. And now developing the software that is for iPads and other tablets that creates a film that you can actually look around inside by moving the iPad in different directions. You can look around the space and actually feel like you're inside the story. So it's no longer this passive screen, which you just look at a distance and glimpse it through a window. You actually get this sense of being there. And that's an iPad app that I've just released called Condition One.
You have a prototype. You're working through it. And I've seen it. And I'm trying to figure out how... immersive is the term. I think that's the proper term. How to describe that experience? Because you hear a sound and you move the tablet to sort of react to it. It's kind of extraordinary. How are people talking about what it's like? Because it's so strange. It's such a different experience.
It's been we've had tremendous reactions to it. It's something very new. It's very new technology, and we're trying to combine it with the power of the still image, with the narrative of a documentary film, and now with virtual reality. We're getting to a point where we can blend these once very separate fields to create these immersive experiences and pioneer a whole new way of telling a story. And so this is what I'm working on now.
Do you, you've said that what you wanted is that for people to forget it's a documentary. And you were saying that about this particular one, but explain what you mean by that. Because you want them to feel like it's not a film, it's an experience, that it's more real than that?
Right. I wanted to borrow from the language of narrative cinema and combine it with the tradition of photojournalism that I'd come from to create these experiences, immersive experiences. And so I did. I want people to forget that they're watching a documentary and create this very cinematic experience that when you realize that it's real, it hits you that much harder, and it can have that same impact that perhaps those iconic images from Vietnam did, where they're so powerful that they ingrain into our consciousness to a point where when we look back, that will be sort of that defining memory of those wars.
An important part of the film is the interaction between villagers and soldiers. You know, and the soldiers are there for this particular purpose, but, you know, over the course of, you know, time, things get broken and some of their livestock get killed and they worry about their children. And it's hard to imagine that, you know, American forces are, you know, winning the hearts and minds of these people. But in some ways, and then you think about what's happening with the Taliban, it seems like an impossible task. And I'm wondering, did you come back from that experience with any kind of conclusions about what's going on in Afghanistan and the efforts being made? You know, the intentions are good, of course, but it seems almost impossible.
The more time I spent there, the more I realized just how complex this insurgency was. It's different groups, it's different languages, it's different tribes. And so in this one area that we were in, all the villagers had fled. They knew there was going to be heavy fighting. And then they start trickling back in. And they meet with these U.S. Marines, with Nathan, and it's the first time they've ever even seen Americans. And there's this one scene where these village elders have gathered with the commander, the U.S. Marine commander, and the commander gives a speech of, we're here to help, we're here to get rid of the Taliban. And the first thing the villagers say is, we want you to leave. And so it's this very difficult situation where the villagers are just stuck in the middle. They know the Americans are going to leave at some point, but they also have no support or sympathy for the Taliban. They were just so harsh during their rule that they don't want to get involved on either side. They just want to live their lives. Yet the fighting is happening in their own fields, in their own homes, and they can't help but being part of it.
I don't understand what you're asking. So he wants us to leave this area? Well, we're going to be in the area, not necessarily in these houses or in this village, but we're going to be in this area for quite some time. After you move back into your homes, we will not enter your house without your permission unless we are being attacked from that house. Well, you have to help me with that, to keep the Taliban out of these areas so that we don't have the fights. And I hope that over time that you will accept.
You get a sense of that relationship. And it's just back and forth throughout. Dan Fung Dennis, it's an important part of this film. I didn't want to neglect that part of it. Let me play one more clip. This is from Nathan Harris. And I want to ask you about this particular moment, again, from the film Hell and Back Again.
I knew how bad my injury was. I know about how bad it is and how hard it is for me to walk. And for months I've walked without a cane a couple of feet and fallen. and gotten back up and tried it again and fallen and gotten back up. And I'm only going to be able to get to so good. It's not like I could ever go back to Machine Gun Hill and be able to move around and jump around and fly around and move like that. You know, that's just not going to happen. It's not, there's no way in hell that I could go out there and do that again. That's over. Being a grunt's over. That's the only thing I really want to be.
So how do you think he's, Nathan, taking it now? I mean, do you think he's accepted his what's going on now?
He has realized that he is never going to go back. He's never going to be that leader of men. And now he's in the Wounded Warriors Regiment at Camp Lejeune. He's still doing a lot of physical therapy for his injury. And he's more recently started psychological counseling. But he's very much together with Ashley. They're doing well. And I think that's the most important part. And so he's not quite sure what he's going to do next. He's, you know, thinking of possibly retiring from the Marines and starting a business in his hometown. But it's hard. It's hard to find something that has that same sense of purpose, that same sense of mission of being that infantry grunt in Afghanistan.
Dan Fung Dennis, he's the director of the film Hell and Back Again. Tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, Radio West and the Utah Film Center is presenting the film. Dan Fung Dennis will be on hand for discussion right after it. Go to our website for details. Dan Fung Dennis, thank you very much for the time.
Thank you for having me.
Radio West, a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.
Support for the series Through the Lens on Radio West is provided by Rio Tinto and the Utah Film Center, partnering to bring the world of film to local audiences through screenings and public discussion. Upcoming screening details at utahfilmcenter.org.